everyone. We're back again. I have John Shipley with me with the Jags. He's a beat writer for the Jags over there. How's it going, John? Excited to have you back.
Doing good. How are you guys doing?
Good. I'm excited. This is a team that's, you know, getting talked about a lot. A lot of stuff is happening. We'll jump right into it. How do you feel like the draft went for these guys?
I feel like they had an okay draft. I feel like, you know, with the amount of picks they had, especially, you know, five picks in the top 65, I feel like maybe, you know, they could have done a little bit better. I obviously, you know, Trevor Lawrence at number one overall, that's always going to make your draft class look better. He was, to me, by far, you know, the best player in the draft, not just the best quarterback, but, you know, Travis Etienne is a guy I liked a lot as a prospect, but I'm not as sold on taking a running back in the first round. I think obviously people are way overreacting to him getting mini camp reps, you know, at receiver, because he was literally, you know, they put video out of him taking handoffs from Trevor Lawrence yesterday. So I think him actually, you know, doing more of dual threat stuff actually helps his value, but I still think they could have, you know, found a player like that later. Tyson Campbell, he fits the scheme really well, and there weren't that many outside corners taken after him who I think were better prospects than him. But it just kind of goes back to the whole ETN argument where, you know, they could have gotten a better corner like Greg Newsome at 25 and then taking a running back later instead of taking the running back at 25 and then taking the slightly, you know, lower tier corner at 33. Walker Little at 45 I thought was actually one of the best picks. I know a lot of people, you know, kind of harped on it because he hasn't played in 2 years. That deserves a lot of context because he didn't play in all 2019 because of a knee injury. That's 100% correct. But he was slated to play last year. You know, he was healthy to play last season. And if there's not a worldwide pandemic that causes several big name prospects, especially in the Pac-12, to not play, then, you know, he likely would have been a first round pick, if not, you know, a top 20, top 25 pick. So I think he was good value there. Andre Sisco at 65, I was a big fan of his play. The only reason I had him a bit lower on my board was because he is fresh off an ACL injury. The Jaguars seem to think that he'll be ready to go by week one. And, you know, if he is, you know, playing and moving like he did at Syracuse, he could be a big upgrade in the back end. It's just, you know, they need to refine some of the, like, weaknesses to his game. So I thought overall, you know, they got some solid impact players. It's just the value at a couple spots you could probably question.
Right, of course. And I feel like with any team that always happens where there's always a couple questionable picks at the value where they do end up going. But, I mean, you touched on it a little. What's up with ETN doing reps wide receiver? What's still there? Just more of a practice thing going on? What do you think is the real situation with ETN taking those wide receiver reps during practice?
Yeah, I mean, Urban Meyer said the day after they drafted ETN that he was going to be cross-trained and, you know, a player who would get reps of both receiver and running back because, you know, they have their running backs that are going to be pounding, you know, the ball in between the tackles, you know, every other play. Obviously, Travis Etienne is going to run his fair amount of inside zone, outside zone, etc. But with the role they envision for Travis Etienne, a role where they want to utilize him both in the passing and running game, okay, what's the one thing Etienne probably doesn't need as much work in right now? The running game, because, you know, he broke countless ACC records, but in terms of being a receiver, he rarely ran routes from anywhere but the backfield at Clemson. So if there's any area of his game that he needs help for the role they envision him in, it's actually at receiver. So I thought it was actually an expected move because, you know, like I said, they had literally said it after they drafted him. And then I saw it was surprising to me to see so many people kind of react to it the way they did, especially because I think Najee Harris said literally like that same day that the Steelers have him playing some X receiver. But I've quickly learned that if Urban Meyer says something, it's going to garner a reaction.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, he also made the comment, and this is something that got everyone all fired up right away, that ETN is a third down back, which, as we know, ETN is not a third down back.
I don't think he chooses his words very carefully, and I think people like to latch on to him.
Yeah, I think that's being a newer coach too. I think he's like learning the things. Like when you say something, people are going to stick with it. I mean, the amount of times I've heard people say ETN is not a third down back since that comment has come out is crazy.
Exactly. And I think that's definitely, you know, if he says something like that at Ohio State or Florida, you know, nobody's questioning him, but you know, now you got all eyes on.
Yeah. This is the big leagues now a little bit. So I think that those kinks will work out with Urban Meyer. I think that he's still already doing a fantastic job down there, but staying on ETN before we move on to something else, what does this do to James Robinson? This is someone, this is probably more of a question, you know, the fantasy community would love to know this answer because we saw James Robinson come out and do fantastic. Does ETN hurt James Robinson?
Well, I think anybody that was entering this offseason after the Jaguars, you know, made their initial comments around free agency about wanting to get more explosive at running back, I think anybody that didn't expect Robinson to have at least a diminished role to some extent this year, you know, wasn't really paying that much attention. And in terms of just, you know, like last year, no team had fewer running attempts than the Jacksonville Jaguars. They were the most pass happy team in the NFL last year because, you know, they were obviously down by several points, you know, throughout the entire game and had the pass to keep up. But despite them almost never running the ball, James Robinson still had the sixth most rushing attempts in the league. You know, he still played a high percentage of snaps, and he did all this while missing two games. The odds of him replicating that kind of like role and that kind of production just isn't high. You know what I mean? So it's just not going to happen.
Absolutely. I think another player that's obviously gotten a lot of attention, I'd be remiss not to ask you about what's going on with Tebow here. Is this a locker room move? Is this what's the deal with Tebow being on?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a locker room move because I'm not sure that you can sign a guy who's been out of the league for nearly a decade and, you know, really ask guys to look up to him. I think it's more so, you know, Urban Meyer is that close with Tebow and, you know, he kind of sees this as, you know, Tebow is a guy who kind of fits what, you know, some of the physical qualities that he wants out of position where, you know, they are so bad at the position that, you know, they can even justify to an extent, you know, not working out Tim Tebow, but getting creative at the position, you know, but they're that bad at tight end. It's not like they're signing Tim Tebow and adding him to the best tight end room in the NFL.
Right. Absolutely. I think Tebow, you know, he's getting a lot of slack right now, but I think that what it sounds like from what I've heard, listening to Urban Meyer, doesn't sound like he was necessarily at a bunch of the workouts for him, but it sounds like everyone was very impressed and, thought that he was like in the best shape of his life. So, and also Tebow, we have to give credit where credit is due. He did play in the MLB. He is an athletic person, by nature. So I think that maybe it's not as crazy of a move. Yes, he's a little bit older and I get that, but I think the move is getting a little bit more hate than I think it maybe deserves.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. And I think, you know, it will deserve a lot more attention when it comes to, you know, whether or not he makes a 53-man roster because, you know, being signed to a 90-man roster doesn't automatically, you know, guarantee you that kind of spot. So I think a lot of it depends on if he actually does make the team. My guess is honestly, unless he retires in camp, I do think he makes a team because I can't see Urban Meyer cutting, you know, his favorite son. I just, you know, even right. If he should, I just can't see it.
Right. My thing is too, like, they didn't go through all of this to bring Tebow on to not have him on the roster, you know?
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
That he's more than a camp body. It's been a little bit more making the community enough where I think obviously Urban Meyer has made his move for a purpose. We're going to see Tebow on the field next year, in my opinion.
Exactly. And I, you know, if there's any coach who honestly would probably have a role and vision for Tebow, it's probably Meyer, you know, using him in some kind of short yardage things. Again, it's not a move I would make, but it's a move that, you know, Meyer can probably, you know, he at least has some points that he can use to argue for it. Again, I think there's more negatives to positives to it. I honestly think it's a low upside move to begin with. I don't even really know what they can benefit, you know, from it. But right. At the end of the day, I just think he's somebody that Meyer is that close with that he's willing to give.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like the upside, I mean, and also the tight end position in general across the league is kind of weak. You know, not much that people have to do to even really enter the conversation actually from where we are at the tight end position. But, moving off of Tim Tebow, because, you know, Twitter has just beaten the topic to death. We won't stay on it for too long. Is what's going? Lawrence had labrum surgery. Do we have any updates on that?
Yeah, no. I mean, Lawrence, you know, he's been throwing, you know, in practice. You know, they've been putting out clips of him throwing, you know, on the field, you know, in OTAs, rookie mini camp. You know, he even, like I said, there was videos of him doing handoffs, you know, from yesterday. So with the amount of that we've seen him been throwing, and it really doesn't look like he's limited in that sense. You know, they say they have him on a pitch count right now. And the way Meyer described it was that's more to ensure he's limiting, you know, the potential of him kind of falling and injuring that labrum. Mm-hmm. But in terms of just throwing the football, I don't think it doesn't look like there's any limitations with him right now. So I think he should be, you know, full go, you know, all signs ahead for week one.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's so exciting to see, you know, this franchise now getting these players that are going to make a difference. What do you think moving into next season, kind of the weaknesses that will be like kind of will maybe plague them a little bit moving forward.
Well, I think maybe a lack of an intermediate threat. You know, Laviska Shenault is probably the best option at slot right now. Mm-hmm. He's a very talented receiver. He was their best receiver last year in terms of gaining separation, you know, per next gen stats. And, you know, he's a guy who can get open against man coverage. But other than him, they don't really have anybody who's that quick, you know, get open against man coverage type. And, you know, they, like I said, their tight end room is bad enough that they, you know, have signed Tim Tebow. So that kind of tells you, you know, what they think about that position in terms of making an impact in the passing game. I mean, the two other investments they made at tight end this season, and Luke Farrell and Chris Manhertz, both mm-hmm. of those guys are blocking tight ends. So I think really just, you know, having that kind of difference maker in the middle of the field and offense. And then on defense, I think it's going to be getting to the passer, you know, until they prove that, you know, they can do it. They have a lot of potential, you know, Josh Allen and Kalavon Chase on. And I think, you know, if they can put it together, you know, that's a front seven that has a lot of potential, but you need to actually do it. You know, Kalavon Chase on was one of the most productive edge rushers in this, like for the last mm-hmm. 6 weeks of the season last year in terms of getting pressures and getting quarterback hits, but he still finished with just one sack. You know, you can get all these quarterback pressures, all these, you know, quarterback mm-hmm. hits, but if you're not actually getting the quarterback down, it's not helping the defense as much. So I think really those are two big areas they need to focus on.
Yeah. And you mentioned Visca, like the fantasy community likes to call him, but what do you think? Do you think he can step into this role and be that dominant receiver that they kind of need? I think he can. I'm excited for Visca. I think this is going to be a very big year for him.
I think it's going to be a big year for him too. And, you know, I've tried to fight the good fight on Twitter all season. Before the draft, I talked to Jaguars receivers coach Sanjay Lal, and he told me, you know, that he thought Laviska was a physical specimen who doesn't have a ceiling. And he told me that, you know, the role they envision for him this year is more receiver driven. So I think all the people thinking he's, you know, a guy is going to be limited to those gadget type plays like he was all last season. That's wrong. I think they're really going to unleash him as a true receiver, really let him attack downfield more. So I think him and DJ Chark are both in for big seasons just because, I mean, DJ mm-hmm. Chark's another guy who, you know, he doesn't always get open, but he can make incredible catches. He has great catch radius, and he's a guy who has, you know, highlight potential. It's just his quarterback couldn't give him the ball last year, no matter which quarterback it was. So I think those are two guys that could explode.
Exactly. And then you bring Lawrence in, and you're kind of giving them that elevation that I think that they needed to be able to take it to the next level. Another person I want to ask you about is Colin Johnson's role with the pass catchers that have been brought in. Where do we see him go from here?
Yeah, no, somebody actually asked Meyer after the draft if he considered Johnson that tight end. And Meyer said, you know, he had actually thought about it, you know, him as a move tight end, but he didn't think he had that kind of frame. So I think right now, mm-hmm. you know, he has to kind of compete for a spot as a rotational outside receiver. You know, he has a lot of size. He has better speed than you would think for a 6'6" guy. You know, he's easily their biggest receiver. And I thought he was one of the more impressive rookies last year. It's just the thing working against him is, you know, that element of speed. You know, DJ Chark, Marvin Jones, Laviska Shenault, all guys mm-hmm. who are a bit more explosive than him. And Urban Meyer has always placed a big emphasis on that. So it might be a case of good player, questionable fit. But, you know, he has been a guy who, you know, like I said, Sanjay Lal had good things to say about him and how hard he's been working, how often he's been at the facility working all season. So I think he's a guy who's fully bought in. It just, you know, they have to kind of figure out what kind of role.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And I mean, looking at the season in its entirety, if you were to guess a record that this team is looking at, where do you think that they place themselves? How many wins are we looking at for them?
Yeah, I did a win-loss prediction the other day. And, you know, you would never guess from projecting a team to go from 1 win to 6 wins and you would get angry replies, but that is certainly like that. I said 6-11 with lots of close losses. I feel like with a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach and a young roster, that's reason.
Yeah, and that's a big thing that I think a lot of fans forget is just because you have a new coach doesn't mean that you're automatically going to win a lot. I mean, even as a Giants fan, I know that that's very true, but you see the Jets, the Jags, a lot of these fans, even the Eagles getting very excited with their new coach, but that's not a fix all. There's a little bit more that goes into it than just having a new coach. So I think 6 wins is fantastic. I think that would be, you have to look at the season at its value and realize where you came from. And exactly. That making 6 wins from the system that they were in is fantastic.
Exactly. And like last year, you know, Justin Herbert, you know, broke all these records. The Chargers still fired their head coach and picked 13th overall, you know. So like you can still have a rookie mm-hmm. quarterback have an excellent year and still, yes. you know, kind of be a year away.
Right. And it takes, there's a little bit more to it. And especially a team like this, who there's a lot of young guys. You're bringing in young talent. Yes. Well, you know, the outlier is Tebow himself being his age, but it's a lot of young guys. So there is a little bit of culture that needs to come back there.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And, you know, they, you know, need to teach these guys at the end of the day how to win, because most of the guys on that team are guys that have been drafted by the Jaguars after 2017, and they haven't known anything but losing at the NFL level so far.
Right. Absolutely. So I won't keep you too long, because I know that you have another interview coming up, but what are you looking forward to for this team for this next season?
I think just to show that, you know, they're more competitive week in and week out, and that they're actually able to adapt to their player strengths. I thought, you know, a big reason the last regime struggled, you know, it wasn't because they failed to develop players like anything like that, but they a lot of times put, you know, square pegs in the round holes. You know, it didn't seem like they had a cohesive plan. So I think just seeming like they, you know, actually have a plan for the season, you know, at foot, and they're actually prepared for major decisions and not just kind of, you know, doing things, you know, by the seat of their pants, I think that would be a positive sign. Obviously, signing Tim Tebow is not a great sign for a team having a cohesive and coherent plan, but you know, that to me would be, you know, a positive season for them.
Right, and you get a vet at least out of Tebow. I think there is a little bit of positivity there, yeah, having a locker room, especially a guy that does, you know, obviously has a bond with the coach, or he wouldn't be back in the league since retiring from football so many years ago. And I think that there's something to that, where once you stop trying to force players to fit molds that they don't fit, then you start seeing success. It happens across the league, like everywhere. So once you actually are putting players in a position to succeed in the position that they do well at and how they play well into a certain scheme, that's where you start to see success.
No, 100%. And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing, you know, and Meyer has said it multiple times throughout the offseason that he doesn't think they're bad players, they're bad coaches. And I think, you know, their draft kind of showed their philosophy there in terms of, you know, they're going to roll the dice on players who might be, you know, high risk, but high potential, because, you know, they're going to demand their coaches get it out of them. And if they don't, it's going to be on the coaches and on the organization and not so much on the player.
Right. And I think something that we saw in this draft more than we've seen in the past is there was a lot of scouting to this draft. It's very obvious. And I think the Jags stand out to me as one of those teams, and as well as my New York Giants, is, you know, you could tell that they basically had a list of their guys that they scouted and spent time on, and they liked these guys, and they kind of just crossed the names out as they went, and then they picked the next guy, and that's probably why they ended up with ETN. So it seems like a crazy pick to a lot of people, but I think it was well thought out, because I think they scouted him, and I think that he was just the next name on their list.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I really do think, you know, they went with the best available player type thing, because, I mean, you look at, you know, running back, cornerback, offensive tackle, you know, three of their top four picks. Those are positions they already, you know, had starters in. You know, they're not positions that, you know, they immediately needed somebody, but I think this regime understands that they need to build for the long term, and this isn't a franchise that has a lot of long-term pieces in place. So, you know, I would definitely agree with you, and I think best player available is definitely a strategy they went with.
And I think for a young coach to be getting the guys that he really wanted on the team, I think there's something to that as well, because he obviously sees the picture and he sees where that player can fit into the scheme. So I think there's a nice marriage between having a young coach and using heavy scouting mechanism when it comes to drafting.
Yeah, no, 100%. And a big part of it also was Meyer's relationship with a lot of these prospects. You know, there were several of them, you know, that he recruited out of high school, you know, like Jay Tefele, Tyson Campbell, Luke Farrell. These are all guys Meyer has known for, you know, 4 to 5 years. You know, Tosh Lupoy, the defensive line coach, he recruited several of these guys. You know, so these are all guys that, you know, they have relationships to, and you can tell that was a big emphasis for the draft.
Yeah. Definitely. I won't keep you too long. Why don't you let everyone know where they can find you on Twitter? John's an awesome follow. Seriously, he keeps everything so up to date with the Jags. Love following him on Twitter. So let them know where they can find you, where they can find your work, sort of thing. And we'll get you out of here.
Yeah, you can find me. It's at Jaguar Report on Twitter, or I'm at @John_Shipley. I understand that is two more underscores than any Twitter name needs, but blame the John Shipley. It's been a sports writer in Minnesota for like 50 years who called dibs on that. And then you can find us, so, you know, at si.com/NFL/Jaguars. We always have a few things up a day. You know, it's more so centered on, you know, news, reporting, you know, features, and also some analysis.
Great. Yeah, love it. And you guys, obviously, you can find this show on Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen to it. Find us on Twitter at OnBeat19, at SleeperWire. You can find me, of course, at Steffi Smalls with 3 L's. Thank you, John, for coming on. This was fantastic. I think I got you out of here in the nick of time, and yeah, I appreciate you coming on.
No, thank you for having me on. I always love coming on, and you know, thank you for always being flexible and patient with me. And I can't wait to come on again during the season.
Yes, we'll have to catch back up during the season, and we'll catch you guys during the next episode.